If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Protests spread across China over the country's COVID restrictions.
It's rare to see this sort of direct political dissatisfaction going against the top leadership, especially in the capital of Beijing.
Plus, DC lobbyists push to make pandemic-era telehealth rules permanent. And the Bahamas defends its handling of the FTX meltdown. It's Monday, November 28th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. And here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Protests erupted in major cities across China over the weekend over President Xi Jinping's zero-tolerance approach to COVID in an unusual show of defiance in the country. Demonstrations occurred throughout the weekend in both Beijing and Shanghai, and according to eyewitness accounts, there were also protests in the eastern city of Nanjing and in Wuhan, the original epicenter of the pandemic. Chinese stocks slid in trading today, with Hong Kong's benchmark Hang Seng Index dropping more than 4% after it opened. Wall Street Journal China Markets reporter Rebecca Fung says that while the index recovered ground during the trading day, investors are unaccustomed to the headlines currently coming out of the country.
First, it's just that many people in China haven't really seen the situation before, and so traders don't know, frankly, how to trade it. And second is that these demonstrations do sort of complicate the direction of the zero COVID policies a little bit, because the government may actually decide to strengthen the measures even further. And thirdly, it's just international investors. They've always been pricing in the geopolitical risks of Chinese assets, but they actually haven't priced in the domestic political risk ever, basically. So these protests could introduce some kind of uncertainty on that front.
We will have more on the political significance of this weekend's protests later in the show. The Attorney General of the Bahamas is defending his country's handling of the collapse of crypto exchange FTX. The island nation's leaders have come under pressure after encouraging cryptocurrency companies to set up shop there. In a national address on Sunday, Ryan Pinder disputed statements by FTX's new chief and lawyers in U.S. bankruptcy court who had questioned whether regulators in the Bahamas had the authority to take control of the local FTX subsidiary's assets around the time of its bankruptcy earlier this month. Pinder said the Bahamas had that right and did so to protect customers and creditors, adding that FTX's implosion was caused by bad behavior, not lax oversight by local regulators. U.S. life insurers paid out a record $100 billion in death benefits last year, a jump of 11%, according to the American Council of Life Insurers. The trade group said that that jump, which followed a 15% year-over-year rise in 2020, was most likely due to the pandemic and another year of COVID-19 deaths. Those year-over-year increases are among the largest since the 1918 flu pandemic. We are exclusively reporting that some of America's biggest banks, including JPMorgan Chase, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America, are devising a plan to compensate customers who fall victim to scams on its Zelle payment network. That is according to people familiar with the matter, who say the banks are in advanced discussions to create a playbook for refunding customers and each other for illegitimate transfers in order to boost security and customer trust in the payment system, which is jointly owned by a consortium of banks. Zelle's operator, Early Warning Services, LLC, said that fraud and scam claims have been made on only a tiny slice of payments, less than 0.1%. And early reports suggest that Americans returned to their pre-pandemic habits on Black Friday and spent more time and money in stores than last year. However, some data show customers were also cautious with spending as inflation weighs on their pocketbooks. Black Friday store traffic rose 7% compared to last year, according to Retail Next, which tracks shopper counts at thousands of stores. Meanwhile, MasterCard Spending Pulse, which measures in-store and online retail purchases, said that Black Friday sales rose 12% from last year, though that report isn't adjusted for inflation. A major lobbying push is underway in Washington, D.C., as startups and medical organizations push to make pandemic-era relaxations on some telehealth rules permanent. And it's a lobbying effort that is taking on added urgency now as federal public health officials weigh whether and for how long to extend the COVID-19 public health emergency. Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Esley White covers the pharmaceutical industry for us out of Washington, D.C., and she joins us now with the latest. Hey, Liz, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So bring us up to speed here, Liz. What is it about these pandemic-era relaxations on telehealth rules that some companies want to keep in place?
Yeah, there's a range of things that changed during the pandemic that really opened up telehealth to be a major part of the American medical system, such as relaxations and allowing Medicare to pay for more telehealth. One of the really interesting battles that we've been tracking is over controlled substances telehealth. In other words, there's all these new companies and doctors that have been around for a long time but are now prescribing things like Adderall or buprenorphine for opioid use disorder online or over the phone, and that's allowed a lot of people to access treatment that wouldn't otherwise have it.
Liz, two companies that are involved in prescriptions of controlled substances, Cerebral and Dunn, are under federal investigation. Where does that leave other telehealth players?
Yeah, there's actually a really bipartisan, broad coalition from big to small companies and doctors and medical organizations that definitely want to see a lot of telehealth extended. It's a complicated dance because there's also state rules that impact how telehealth gets done. And so you're seeing some organizations facing the reality that they're just going to have to conform to the tightest restriction that states have because they can't do it differently in every single state.
And finally, Liz, I guess the clock is kind of ticking on a decision here.
Yeah. So Secretary Becerra said that he would give states notice if he was going to end the public health emergency for COVID-19. He didn't give that notice this month. And so we expect to see the emergency extended in January, which means it would go until at least April. That's the earliest it could get cut off. But if it does get cut off, a lot of groups are worried that that would also cut off patients from their telehealth that they've become used to and the doctors they've gotten used to. And so there's a lot of rush to get some new rules in place before that happens.
That was Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Esley White, who covers the pharmaceutical industry for us out of Washington, D.C. Liz, thank you.
Thank you, Luke.
Coming up, we'll get the latest from Beijing after a weekend of protests over the country's pandemic policies. That's after the break.
If only life had a remote control, you could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Protests erupted over the weekend in major cities across China over President Xi Jinping's zero-tolerance approach to COVID-19. Wall Street Journal senior China correspondent Brian Spiegel joins us now from Beijing with the latest on what's going on across the country. Brian, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian, could you describe what occurred over the weekend and what spurred this?
Right. So in cities across China, including some of the biggest cities in the country, Beijing, Shanghai, and elsewhere, we saw mass demonstrations clearly targeting President Xi Jinping's zero COVID policies. What prompted all of this was ostensibly a fire in the city of Urumqi, in which multiple people were killed, and reports that people had been effectively locked in their homes while facing quarantine by the government. What transpired effectively in Beijing, especially and in Shanghai, was a much more kind of complicated protest. On one hand, they were definitely unhappy about the government's approach to COVID-19. But also what I witnessed in Beijing being at the protests were broader calls for political reform. just a substantial amount of discontent, broadly speaking, which is really rare to see so publicly aired in China.
Yeah, Brian, so I guess we have seen more narrow protests against specific COVID restrictions before, but usually not more than that.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. So for months now, we've been hearing and we've been reporting on the discontent that was being felt in China, specifically about the draconian COVID measures. But the discontent was pretty much limited to the dinner table. Your friends or people, Chinese people, would talk about it with their friends, with their family. But really, nobody could imagine that it would erupt into street protests like we're seeing now. It's not as if we don't see protests in China ever. Protests are happening in China every day. There's labor protests, there's rural farmer protests, there's all sorts of protests. But what's unique about what's going on right now is the numbers of cities that this is happening in, but also kind of the convergence of a number of different issues, a number of different grievances that Chinese people are feeling. And what experts tell us is this makes it much more difficult for the government to resolve.
And have you been out there speaking to people? And if so, is there concern about the consequences that they might face?
Yeah, people are scared. Let's be very clear about it. People know the consequences. So I was in Beijing last night, and when we got the early reports around 9, 10 p.m. that protests were erupting, I went out on a bicycle out to find the protesters, and I stayed with them till about 2:30, 3 o'clock yesterday morning. And there were several thousand, I would estimate, at least protesters who were basically fronting up against police officers. All of them were really aware of potential parallels, I should say, to the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989. People were very straight up in telling us that they were worried about their safety and the potential consequences. But I think back to one protester in particular who told me, even if we could just make some incremental change in China, he would think of that being a success. So just such rare, having reported in China a long time, it's rare to see this sort of direct political dissatisfaction faced at, you know, going against the top leadership, especially in the capital of Beijing.
Yeah, you mentioned protesters squaring off against police. What was the security response to these demonstrations? And has there been a broader government response yet?
So I think it's varied a little bit city by city. In Beijing itself, what I observed last night was a relatively, we'll call it a restrained response by Chinese standards. For example, police did not come in riot gear. They were not armed as far as I could see. My interpretation of that was they did not want to provoke the protesters to expand the protest in any way. Now, I'm not saying there won't be consequences for the protesters down the line. Clearly, there were plainclothes police officers there, state security agents who were filming many of the protesters. And Beijing is a city that is covered in surveillance cameras. So, you know, make no mistake, I think, you know, many of the protesters will face consequences down the line. But Beijing, the situation was resolved peacefully last night. In Shanghai, it was a slightly different situation. We're getting reports of foreign journalists, including a BBC cameraman, who was detained, arrested, and severely beaten by Chinese police in that city. So it's been a bit different, and I think it's still a volatile situation. And I think the big question is going to be, do the protests continue? Do they fizzle out? And we really just don't know the answer to that yet.
That was Wall Street Journal senior China correspondent Brian Spiegel joining us from Beijing today. Brian, thank you so much.
Great. Thank you very much.
And finally, according to a new study, that $249 pair of Apple AirPod earphones could help you hear better. Research recently published in the journal iScience found that the sound amplification feature on Apple's AirPods Pro helped adults with mild to moderate hearing loss to hear speech nearly as well as two prescription hearing aids, even though the earphones didn't meet FDA hearing aid standards. Wall Street Journal medical science reporter Dominique Mossbergen says that while that is encouraging news for those contending with hearing loss, especially given that hearing aids in the U.S. can cost thousands of dollars per pair and aren't usually covered by insurance, AirPods do have some limitations.
It's really only going to be good for people with certain kinds of hearing loss. Also, AirPods, you know, have limited battery life, and so it's not something that you can wear all day. Also, because of how the AirPod Pros work, is you need another device to pick up those external sounds. And so that might be kind of inconvenient when you're walking around the world and wanting to hear the world better, or wanting to hear conversations, or maybe someone approaching from behind you, or hear a car coming. You need to have your phone out at all times trying to pick up all this sound, and that can be maybe a bit challenging.
And that's What's News for Monday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with the Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.